Perhaps I should make another little announcement. While it was arranged that I should take the Sundays of November, and most of you know that I'm always quite willing to sit there and listen if somebody comes along to stand here and speak. 2 weeks from today, in the will of the Lord now, 2 weeks from today, we are expecting Mr. Norman Edwards to be here. It's many long years since we had Mr. Edwards here. He spoke here on the day that Herbert had an awful job setting fire to a little piece of paper. He tried to burn that mortgage, you know, we had a meeting here and Mr. Edwards was here. And then we had him here when Alan Parks came and sang for us, had a real good night on Saturday night, and Mr. Edwards gave the message. He hasn't been with us, I don't think, since then. So he's been sick off and on for a long time. He lives up there now in Washington area. So we're expecting him down here 2 weeks from now. I look forward to that, and we'll have him here to minister the word to us. Now tonight, I want to start a little series of studies in the life of Abraham. And by way of a springboard, let's look at Acts chapter 7 first of all. Get a verse from Acts chapter 7, then we'll go back to the book of Genesis. The book of Acts chapter 7. Then said the high priest, "Are these things so?" And he said, "Men, brethren, and fathers, hearken. The God of glory appeared unto our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia before he dwelt in Charan, and said unto him, Get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred, and come into the land which I shall show thee. Then came he out of the land of the Chaldeans and dwelt in Charan. And from thence, when his father was dead, he removed him into this land wherein ye now dwell." Now let us go back to the historical record in the book of Genesis, chapter 12. The book of Genesis, chapter 12. Verse 1. Now the Lord had said unto Abraham, "Get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house into a land that I will show thee. And I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless thee and curse him that curseth thee, and in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed." So Abraham departed as the Lord had spoken unto him, and Lot went with him. And Abraham was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. And Abraham took Sarai his wife, and Lot his brother's son, and all their substance that they had gathered, and the souls that they had gotten in Haran, and they went forth to go into the land of Canaan. And into the land of Canaan they came. Abram passed through the land unto the place of Sichem, unto the plain of Moreh. And the Canaanite was then in the land. And the Lord appeared unto Abram and said, "Unto thy seed will I give this land." And there builded he an altar unto the Lord who appeared unto him. And he removed from thence unto a mountain on the east side of Bethel, pitched his tent, having Bethel on the west, and Ai on the east. There he builded an altar unto the Lord, and called upon the name of the Lord, and Abram journeyed, going on still toward the south. Now we'll pause there in our reading for a moment or two. I don't know how far down we'll get this in this chapter tonight, but where we stop tonight we'll take up perhaps next Sunday night. Have you ever wondered, see, this morning I was talking to you about this young fellow, Isaiah, who had that wonderful revelation of the God of glory. And his life never was the same after that day. when he came under the searchlight of the glory of God. He was brought right down to take his rightful place. And then he received his commission from the Lord, and for almost 60 years he was a witness for God. Here again, here's another man by the name of Abram, who afterwards was changed to Abraham. And according to what we read in Acts chapter 7, it was the God of glory who appeared to Abraham. Now Abraham had a father, and he had other members of the family, and he had a lot of other relatives. And certainly a lot more people were living down in Ur of the Chaldees. But the God of glory didn't appear to any of them. The God of glory appeared to Abram when he was down in Ur of the Chaldees. I wonder if you have ever sat down in your meditations and thought along lines like this. Well, why is it that so-and-so came to the point where they got saved, they trusted the Lord, their life was changed? Some folks say, oh, he became religious. Yes, it may be he became religious, but it was more than becoming religious. He was a man whose whole life was changed. He seemed to have something in his experience where he came to grips with spiritual and eternal realities. Yet here are other people who seem to be brought up the same way, living the same lifestyles, but somehow nothing took place for them. Have you ever puzzled over that? And when a man or a woman professes to have become a Christian, have you ever asked yourself this question? Now, I wonder, are there circumstances somewhere lying in the background where God has been moving and God has been operating and controlling until that vital time is reached and that person turns to God? Think of Abraham now just for a moment or two. He's a rather unique person. Interesting. You'll come to that conclusion if you read down through Hebrews chapter 11 and see the amount of space that is given in that wonderful chapter to things pertaining to Abraham. You have other great men there, and you'll find six of them all in one verse. You find another verse perhaps that brings two of them together, or three of them together. But Abraham, he's got quite a space there in that great chapter of faith. And when you go back here, you discover the things in the background of Abraham. And no doubt while he was living down in Ur of the Chaldees, he must have been thinking about other things. For instance, in Ur of the Chaldees, he was living right in the very midst of idolatry. And wherever you have idolatry, you have immorality. The standards are very low. The moral standards have gone down wherever you have idolatry. Yeah, that's where he was living. But if you care to watch and mark this out, here's what you'll find. And I want you to look now at chapter 11 for a moment or two. We're reading chapter 12. Look at chapter 11 and verse 10. These are the generations of Shem. Now, who was Shem? Was he one of the sons of Noah? That when Noah came out of the ark, he had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And here we're learning something about Shem. These are the generations of Shem. Now look again at verse 27. Now these are the generations of Terah. Terah begat Abraham, Nahor, and Haran begat Lot, and so on. Now you take that little expression, these are the generations of. You'll find it, I think, 11 times in the book of Genesis. It forms the natural division of that book. The expression, repeated again and again, these are the generations of. You'll find that this one, Terah, is the very central one. Five times before, five times after. Terah takes the central place in connection with this expression. These are the generations of. And why is it said here? It's leading to Abram, to tell us who Abraham was. So you find that Abraham is a descendant of Shem. So that when you look back to the flood, and the three men that came out of the ark with Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, who divide the human race into those three ethnic groups that descended from them, Abraham comes from the line of Shem. The fact of the matter is that Shem was still alive when Abram was born. In fact, Abram would be quite a good age, and for a number of years would be contemporary with Shem. So if he went along and had a little conversation with Shem, he would be able to learn the whole story of the flood and what happened and what took place after the flood regarding the Tower of Babel and so on. But thinking of this fellow by the name of Shem, you got to remember he lived before the flood. And one of his ancestors was a man called Methuselah. Methuselah died the year that the flood came. That's why he was called Methuselah, because his father named him that, meaning, when he is gone, it shall come. And he lived right up to the year that the flood came. So that Shem, who was quite a good age when the flood came, would be able to have a good conversation with Methuselah. And remember this, Methuselah overlapped with Adam for 200 years. While you have 1600 years from the fall to the flood, these two men, Adam and Methuselah, spanned that whole era of time and were contemporary for 200 years. So that if Adam was able to tell Methuselah the whole story of the fall, Methuselah was able to tell his descendant Shem, the son of Noah. He in turn comes through and is still alive when Abraham is born. How easy it was for him to learn the whole history of the fall and the flood and the Tower of Babel and the confusion of languages. Well, you have that in chapter 10 of the book of Genesis. And that brings us to this point, that while Abram was living down there in Ur of the Chaldees, he was not an ignorant man. Or he didn't have the Bible that we have. But he was able to be instructed. And more than that, discoveries that have been made in recent years have proved beyond the shadow of a doubt that the people who lived in Ur of the Chaldees were living in a state of what you may call advanced civilization. Oh, they were writing. Of course they have. They've discovered those clay tablets with writing on them. They found out many things about the conditions of things that prevailed in Ur of the Chaldees. And while he was living in that advanced civilization of that day, down there in a very fertile part of the world at that time, not now, but then, the God of glory appeared to him. In plain words, God broke into his life. I remember a Jew getting very angry with me on one occasion. Of course, a lot of these people from the Middle East are easily stirred up, you know. Both the Arabs and the Jews, they're very easy to get stirred up and they want to fight with everybody. And he got quite angry with me because a man asked me a question. He said, what do you think of a man who changes his religion? And I looked at him and I judged he was a Roman Catholic. I said to him, well, suppose a man is nothing to begin with and changes his religion to another kind of nothing. I said, that's what I think of him. Nothing. So he wasn't happy about that. But I said, you know, a strange thing, there's two men in the Bible who changed their religion. And they're very, very interesting. You'll read in the Old Testament of a man called Abraham. Now remember, Abraham was a man who changed his religion. And all that Jew got very angry at me. And that's when I detected right away between what he said and the shape of his nose that what he was. And I said to him, now look, sir. Abraham was an idolater down in Ur of the Chaldees. Yet he became a believer in the living God of heaven. He believed God, and it was counted unto him for righteousness. But didn't he change his religion from being an idolater to being a worshipper of the living God? I come to the New Testament. I find a man there who was an orthodox, pharisaical Jew. His name was Saul of Tarsus. He kept all the feasts and all the fasts of the Jewish religion. But one day he changed his religion. And he turned away from all the dead works of Judaism. That day on the road to Damascus he came face to face, and the glory of God shone around him. That was the day when he said, Lord, what wilt thou have me to do? Now about these two men, I think the world of them. Because it was when God broke into their lives that they turned to the living God in reality. So Abraham, you see, was living away down there in Ur of the Chaldees, and he was an idolater. When God broke into his life, but you see how God was working behind the scenes. I'm quite sure of this, that Abraham was an intelligent, well-educated man. It's obvious he was a prosperous man. For when they came out from Ur of the Chaldees, it meant much. He didn't just say to the rest of them, "Bye, I'm leaving tomorrow morning, you know, and go away." He couldn't do that. Because you see, business had to be properly done. He had to wind up the affairs. He had to do it intelligently and honorably. But he left out of the Chaldees. And when he left it with quite a lot. He took a lot with him. In fact, one man said he took a lot that he should have left behind. If he had left Lot behind, it would have saved him an awful lot of trouble. But he took him as well as the goods. And they left out of the Chaldees. Try and picture for a moment what it meant for that man. It was the beginning of a new life. And may I suggest to all our hearts tonight, right from that point, you follow through what the Word of God has to say about Abraham. And there's lessons for each of us. Lessons when we've just started, as it were, on the pilgrim journey. Lessons for us if we've gone on quite a distance. Lessons for us if we're still just nearing the end of the journey. There's lessons to be learned as to how to walk before God and how to walk with God. He was a man then who was starting on the pilgrim journey. He was leaving Ur of the Chaldees. Now, when you come to chapter 12 of the book of Genesis, it said, now the Lord had said unto Abraham. That's obvious. That throws you back to the time when he was down in Ur of the Chaldees. You join that with Acts chapter 7 and that proves it. But here in Genesis chapter 12, it is said here, when his father had died, up in that place you might call Charn or Harn, sometimes it's with the sea in front of it and sometimes it isn't. Same place. You see, when he left, they left in a very intelligent way. He was going to a place that God, first of all, told them about. But it seems to me that between the time that God spoke to him and the time that he left, he had learned where it was he was to go. They didn't turn away to the east or to the south. And if they had turned directly west to come into Canaan, they would have to come across a barren wilderness. They couldn't very well do that. That wouldn't have been intelligent. But they came up what is known as the Fertile Crescent. That's getting very popular in world affairs today. Keep your eye on it. They came up the Fertile Crescent, and what other way could they have come if they were bringing herds with them and flocks and servants? People had to be catered for. They had to have a place where they could get pastures for the flocks as they were moving. But the unfortunate thing was this, it was only a partial obedience. You know, we seem to be warned in the Word of God time and again about partial obedience. God calls for full obedience, not partial obedience. You see, God had said to him, he was to leave his country, get out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house. He didn't do that. It's perfectly true, he was leaving his country. But now, in the interval, the others didn't come with him, it seemed, except his father, Terah. And Terah takes command. Of course, that's quite natural that Abraham would have to give in, Eastern custom, he'd have to give in and let his father take command. He didn't leave his father. And he brought with him his nephew Lot, whose father had died before that. And here is Abraham coming away with Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his nephew, with his father Terah, and Terah's in command. Remember this, when they got up through the Fertile Crescent and they got to that place called Haran or Charon, his father wouldn't go any further. He stopped there. That was the first brake that was put on to the chariot wheel, so to speak. That was not where God expected him to be. God says, come to the land that I will show thee. And that was not it. And he never made the final move until his father died. Now, I don't know how you apply that, but is it possible that to bring it over to New Testament language, that Abram at this point hadn't made the final break with the flesh? He was still being controlled by Terah. You see, the fleshly relationship was domineering here. But after his father died, then again God had said to him, get into this land. Now if you watch Abraham and his movements, he goes forth from Ur of the Chaldees. Then he gets into the land of Canaan, and from there he goes down, as we'll find as we go down through this chapter. It's a very unfortunate thing, he goes down. But you know, don't let us be too hard on him. Perhaps all of us here tonight, if not all, then most of us perhaps have had that experience in life after you were converted. Comes a time when there's a little relapse, you know, you do things that you think you shouldn't have done, and you go down. He went down into Egypt, he should never have gone there, brought a lot of trouble on him. But then again, you learn when you come to Chapter 13, that Abraham went up. That's a good turning point. But he went up. And from there you follow through his history and he went on. So you can apply these things in your own life. Here you are, you've set out on the pilgrim's progress, so to speak. You're on the journey, like Abraham. But there are difficulties. You've met with difficulties. Thank God when you come to chapter 12, the change has come. God has said unto him, go out from your father's house, unto the land that I will show thee, and I will make of thee a great nation. Now at this point, he had heard the call to separation. And now the time has come, and he enters into the land. He's away now from his original country. He's away from his kindred. He's away from home. Now he can lay hold upon the promises that God offers. Let me make a little remark here, though, that might interest some of you. It would appear, if you read this incident at the end of chapter 11 and into chapter 12, and what is said about Abram in the New Testament, you'd be inclined to think, if you view it from Abraham's point of view, from the human level, you'd be apt to say, that was a great choice that Abraham made. That was a wonderful decision that Abraham made, to turn his back on his home and on his kindred, and all the amenities he had in other Chaldees, and to set out to follow God. Wonderful decision he made. But if you take time to view it from the other point, it wasn't Abraham that chose God at all. It was God who made choice of Abraham. And if God hadn't appeared to Abraham and broken to Abraham's life, what would he ever have done? You see, the movement came from God. Abraham's movement was simply a response to God bringing in to his life. God must have all the glory. And now here he is, he comes into the land. And while he's in the land, he's away now from his original home, kindred, away from his father. Now he can lay hold upon this great covenant. You notice in this covenant what God says he would do. I will show thee. I will make of thee a great nation. I will bless thee. Make thy name great. Thou shalt be a blessing, and I will bless them that bless thee. You see, it's what God is going to do. Here's the things that God says he would do for Abraham. I will. Now, you and I are too apt to think it's what we do. We've done this. We're going to do that. Friend, the most blessed way to go is to lay hold upon what God says. God says, I will. He promised him a national blessing. I will make of thee a great nation. You know, he has done that. Not only one nation. Many nations have come out of the loins of Abraham. I was trying to read up something recently there and staggered me. The amount of Arabs that are in the world today. It's tremendous. And the countries that they occupy. Where did they come from? Abraham. Then you think of the Jews today. Israel. Where did they come from? Abraham. But the nation that's referred to here, no doubt, is the nation of Israel. I will make of thee a great nation, national blessing. I will bless thee. That's personal blessing. And God did bless Abraham. He blessed them personally in many, many ways. There was a family blessing. Make thy name great. Abraham's name has been passed on to his descendants, children of Abraham. But there's universal blessing, and in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed. That takes us to Calvary. When you come to the opening of the New Testament, the book of the generation of Jesus Christ, son of David, the son of Abraham. And here's the line wherein the blessing has gone out to all nations. After Christ died and was raised again, the commission is given to go and make disciples of all nations. And today the blessing is not simply for one nation. You cannot nationalize the gospel. You cannot nationalize the church. The gospel is to be preached the world over to all nations. And the church is not a national church. Church is a universal church. There's a heavenly body. Thou shalt be a blessing to all nations. And that universal blessing comes in through the Lord Jesus Christ, the Son of Abraham. Now, when you think of those blessings that were offered to Abraham, and you would almost think at the time that there was no sense in it, how could it possibly be brought to pass? He had no children. He had no son. You know, I've often said it must be an awful thing for a man to become a very, very rich man, and he doesn't have anybody to leave his riches to. I wonder, what does he do? I've often thought of some of these old misers who wouldn't even put their money in the bank. I remember a friend of mine telling me about one old man. He said, "You see him?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "He's an old miser." I said, "Is he?" He said, "You'll notice while you're here, Mr. McNeil, having meetings, he'll attend every meeting except the one where we take the offering. He never comes to that one. Never came to the meeting where they took an offering." But he said some time ago, he said he was going into a hospital. He came to me and he said, "Wonder if you'll do me a favor." I said, "What is it?" He says, "I have a box in my house. I'm going into the hospital and I wonder if you'll keep that box for me until I come out. And if I don't come out, just keep it. But I'm hoping to come out." He says, "He brought that box to me." He said, "What a weight." He said, "I wasn't fit to lift the box. All his treasure in that box. And it wasn't paper money either. It was in that box. He kept it in his little house. One night he asked a question. He said, "Do you think Ananias and Sapphira got to heaven?" The man he asked it from said, "Well, I think they got to heaven." He said, "That satisfies me." He said, "I'll be quite pleased if I just get inside the door." He just could get inside the door, quite pleased. He's an old miser. And he had this box of money. Don't know how many sovereigns or silver coins he had in it, but there he kept them. I wonder, it must be awful to be like that. Abraham became a rich man, but he had no offspring. He had no sons, no daughters. God says, "I'll make your name great. I'm going to bless you. And from you there will be a great nation." Poor Abraham. He's in the land. He's got the promises. But how was it to be accomplished? Now notice for a moment or two and then we'll finish. The course that he took. First there's the territory he entered. He entered into the land of Canaan. The land that God told him about. The land that God was going to show him. But there was a certain truth he experienced the moment he came to the place where God told him he wanted him. God wanted him there, and he got to the point where God directed him, right into that land. But the first truth that he experienced was this. Already the place was inhabited by the Canaanites. A sinful, sinful, idolatrous, immoral nation. The Canaanite is still in the land. Here's the land that God has brought me to. In plain words, he's not in heaven when he got into Canaan. He's still on earth. And he's in the midst of sinful people. Yet this is the land that God's going to give him. You know, it's a remarkable thing with all of us, I suppose. I don't know what it's been like with you, but with me, I can go back in memory, and it becomes an awful shock to you when you discover that even if you're saved, you're still surrounded with sin. You're living in a sphere of sin. The sinful people you've got to meet with every day when you go to your work. The sinful people you've got to meet with perhaps even if you're shopping. Sinful people even who are your relatives will pay no respect to your beliefs as a Christian, and they'll deliberately cuss and swear when they're in your presence. Men will do that at their work when they think you're a Christian. And worse than that, it comes as an awful shock when you discover that old sinful nature is still in here. when you discover you've still got to battle the old sinful flesh that's in you. You're not in heaven yet. We haven't been perfected yet. We may be on the way to heaven, but while we're down here, we've got to be faced with all those temptations and trials. He learned this by experience. The Canaanite was still in the land. But there was a testimony that he expressed, and there builded he an altar unto the Lord who appeared unto him. That must have been marvelous. He said, here I'll erect my altar. And if people come along and say to me, now, who do you worship? I worship the Lord. I worship Jehovah, the Lord who appeared to me, the Lord of glory. He had his testimony for the Lord. You know, beloved, it's a good thing to bear a testimony for the Lord, isn't it? Oh, that doesn't mean, as I've said to you often, that you don't need to stick a badge on here that says, I'm a Christian as I go. Without this badge, you wouldn't know. You don't need to do that. When you go into work in a new place, you don't need to stick up a notice and say, everybody take notice, I'm a Christian. And you don't need to do that. That's a piece of hypocrisy. But I heard of a doctor who puts a good notice up in his room and everybody walks into the room. You know perfectly well that he's a doctor. But I said to him, I said, I hope you don't put up prepared to meet thy God. That wouldn't be a nice one to put up, would it? But you see, you can put up a little text. Or you can let people know by your actions that you are a Christian. I remember going to work in one place and it wasn't long there when they came along and said, hey, Mac, would you like to take a draw in the Christmas draw? So what do you mean, the Christmas draw? Well, it'll only cost you so much, but you might win a big bottle of whiskey. I said, would I? Now, what would I do with it? Pour it down the drain? And they looked at me. I said, I don't gamble. Oh, if it's for a good cause, it's going to help the Red Cross. I said, I'm sorry to hear the Red Cross is in need of that. I thought they were paying every week for the Red Cross during the war year. The Red Cross needs any more. They can take another penny or 2 pennies off my wages every week to help. I said, no thank you for your prize draw. I said, I don't take those things. And then after about a week and you're leaving and somebody says, come on, Mac, we're going up to have a drink before we go home. Pay night, you see. I said, drink of what? Oh, one at the bar. I said, I'll go home and get a good drink of tea. And get my supper. Now, I don't drink that stuff. Did you not? And then they come in the Monday morning. Were you at the show on Saturday night? Did you go to sit in such a movie house? Oh, it was great. I said, I never go to these places. I wouldn't enter the filthy place to see the filthy pictures. Well, what do you do yourself? How do you spend your life? Well, I said, we have a Bible reading on Monday night. Prayer meeting, choir practice on Thursday night. And we're out of service on Saturday night. We're in all day on a Sunday. Oh, are you a Christian? Oh my, couldn't you live a life like that? So when I can, I love it. It's simple, you know, if you just get the time and tell them where you stand. He raised his altar to the Lord. He took his stand right there in the land where God had brought him. And he let people know he was a Christian. I'll have to stop. I've got you 4 minutes over the time. We'll take up from there perhaps next Sunday night and we'll follow through in the movements of Abraham. Let's pray. Father, we thank thee for thy kindness to us throughout this day. For every blessing that we receive from thy bountiful hand, we give thee our